Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awaken Your Soul's Journey, the podcast that explores the transformative power of grief. I'm your host, Angela Clement, and I'm here to guide you on a profound journey of healing and self-discovery. Each episode, you will be introduced to experts, authors, and individuals who have experienced grief firsthand to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. Together, we will explore many facets of grief and shed light where there is darkness. Throughout this podcast, we will explore different tools and techniques that can support you in your healing process, from mindfulness and meditation to creative expression and spiritual practices. We will provide you with a diverse range of resources to help you navigate your grief. Whether you have experienced a tremendous loss or simply want to gain a deeper understanding so you can support someone else, this podcast is for you. So if you're ready to embark on this awakening journey with us, make sure to subscribe. Together, let's explore, learn, find healing, and embrace the transformation that awaits us. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I have a very special guest with me today. Her name is Lisa Sugarman. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Angela. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And Lisa is an author and nationally syndicated columnist, a 3-time survivor of suicide loss, a mental health advocate, and a crisis counselor with the Trevor Project. She writes the opinion column, We Are Who We Are, in Boston, and is the author of How to Raise Perfectly Imperfect Kids and Be Okay With It, Untying Parent Anxiety and Life. It is what it is. Available everywhere books are sold. That's the whole title. I guess I could have...
That's okay. It's hard when you look at it quickly to know.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah. So you are also a storyteller with the National Alliance on Mental Illness and a contributor on Healthline Parenthood, Grown and Flown, Today Parents, Thrive Global, Little Things, and More Content Now. And Lisa lives and writes just north of Boston. And we'll talk about how we can get in contact with you later. Thank you again for being a part of the podcast. Really appreciate it.
This is my pleasure. Like you and I were talking about before you hit record, this is what I'm here for. This is what I love to do, have these conversations, and hopefully our conversation reaches somebody who needs to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So tell me, how did you come to do the work that you did now? You know, it looks like, you know, a 3-time survivor of suicide loss, obviously that might've had something to do with it, and who knows what else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That really was the overarching why for me. The interesting thing about my story and kind of my path to where I am now is that I lost my cousin to suicide when I was 9, but it was, you know, the first experience I'd ever had with it. So I only understood it in a very limited way. And it was back in the 70s. So people didn't really talk about suicide. And I lost my father when I was 10, but I was unaware that it was a suicide. So I didn't learn that my dad had died by suicide until I was 45 years old, but he passed away when I was 10 years old. So there's a big 35-year-old chunk there where I always believed that my father had a heart attack. So I've lost him twice. And that is a little nuance to my story that's a little bit different than I think maybe most people survivor stories. And then more recently, ironically, 3 years ago last week, one of our closest childhood friends took his life very, very suddenly. We had no idea he was suffering. So kind of all of those things together, that's my why. And it's become incredibly important to me to create content and have conversations, share stories that all change that narrative. I mean, none of them got help. Most of the three of them, they weren't reaching out In my father's case, no one knew he was hurting. In my friend Stephen's case, no one knew he was hurting. In my cousin's case, they did. But again, I mean, he was 18 years old, and he did what he did very suddenly and unexpectedly. So, you know, for me, all I really want to do is create resources and safe spaces that allow people to have these hard conversations and to kind of move through whatever pain they're in, as opposed to choosing suicide as an option.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, the work that you do. And unfortunately, you know, you hear a lot about suicide loss, maybe partly because, you know, we used to not talk about it so much. But there is a lot of suicide. And I know in Saskatchewan, we have the highest suicide rate in our country. I did not know that before. And so it's interesting, you know, to kind of think about why is that like that? And then what can we do to help that? So I appreciate you. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, you know, it's work that we all need to be doing. It's not, you know, it certainly isn't just me. You know, I mean, there are mental health professionals everywhere, doctors, educators, humans, everyone, all of us. We all have the responsibility to kind of look after each other and keep our eyes open and our ears open. And, you know, I mean, the people who aren't presenting as people with mental health issues, those are the ones to watch the most. And you almost don't know who you're watching. So it becomes more of an issue of just check in with your people. Just have the honest, open conversations and say, are you okay? How are you? Like, how are you really? And don't be afraid to dig a little bit deeper, because those are the people who are really kind of falling under the radar.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting? You know, we talk about how grief in our society, we don't talk about grief. We kind of, I know myself, I felt like, you know, people thought you would just figure it out. And I think that's the way I thought other people, they just figured it out, right? They were sad for a while and then, but just having the conversation about how people are doing, even if they haven't had a loss, you know, just how are you really doing? Because we're very automatic to say, okay, I'm doing good, right? I'm doing good. It's
well, yeah, people don't want to bother or burden other people. And then also the people asking the questions, are you okay, have their own fears about how the person's going to answer. Because in your heart, you may want to ask, you may really genuinely care and want to help, but it's terrifying. Like if you ask someone, are you okay? And they say no, and then they take it one step further and say, actually, I'm kind of, you know, at my breaking point, a lot of people just don't know how to handle that. So, I mean, if you and I at some point even want to have that conversation, I think maybe it can benefit people who might be listening, who might be struggling themselves with those feelings, or might know someone who's struggling, and at least kind of have, you know, a pathway to understand, you know, okay, what do I do now? But I mean, it was also taboo, and people had the sense, I think, that grief is this linear thing, that you start here when you lose someone and then you kind of end here and you go through these stages. And once you get to the end, you're griefless. It's not true. That's not, grief is cyclical. You're kind of spinning around. It's like a spiral staircase. You're up it, you're down it. And, you know, it's always changing and evolving, and you're always grieving for the person that you lost. So it's not quite as cut and dry as we might've used to think it was.
So tell me a little bit more about, you know, how, like you said, you ended up grieving twice over your father, because when you found out that he committed suicide, that changed things for you, or would have changed your, how you looked at it. How did you receive that news? And I guess then how have you moved through that?
Well, I wasn't supposed to know. I wasn't supposed to find out. So my story is, it's not like a super dramatic story. You know, I didn't find some, you know, secret letters or some tapes or anything like that. But I just had a really random conversation with a cousin that I hadn't seen in a really long time. And she asked me about my kids, who at the time, so I've known about 10 years that my dad took his life. My girls are now grown and in their mid-20s. They were probably teens when I knew this for the first time. And we were just chatting, catching up, and she asked me a really out of the blue question. She knew my dad very, very well. And she asked if my girls had ever had any of the same mental illness that my dad had. And I didn't have a clue what she was talking about. I just didn't know. I mean, I knew that he had a full-time job at an import-export company, and he also ran his family's real estate business, which was full-time job, super high pressure. His family was a very unkind family. I wished it weren't the truth, but it was. And no matter what my father did, it was never enough. And so he basically had two full-time jobs and was very overwhelmed by it at times. But you never would have interpreted that as him being low or him being suicidal or him being depressed. It just seemed like he just had a lot on his plate, and that was it, because he was a very joyful and loving and motivated guy otherwise. So my cousin asks me this question. I have no clue what she's talking about. And I eventually go back and I ask my mom. But I wasn't thinking, even in that moment with my cousin asking me that, I wasn't thinking, well, wait a minute, did dad take his life? Was dad super depressed? Like my mind didn't go there. It just kind of got filed away. And the next time I talked to my mother, we were in a conversation and I asked her, I said, was dad depressed? And I kind of really didn't even prepare to ask her. I wasn't even thinking of it ahead of time. It just came out. And she didn't hesitate. She said yes. And then before I had any idea I was even thinking the question or was going to ask the question, it just came right out of my mouth. And I asked my mom if my dad had taken his life, and she said, yeah. And explained to me, so I'm an only child, and my dad was my person in the world. And when he died, I was absolutely, it broke me apart, like completely shattered me to pieces. And so in that moment, my mom just couldn't bring herself to all of a sudden put something else on top of his being gone, like a suicide, something so just mind-blowing, like a suicide. So she didn't. And she gave me a different narrative, told me he had had a heart attack. He was a smoker, so I didn't think twice about it. I was 10 years old. How would I question it? That was it. And that was how it all came out. So it was not, like I said, like the super dramatic event. It just was a conversation. It came out. And it just started years and years worth of just kind of like all of a sudden, you're just reprocessing everything. You go through everything. You're back. Or at least I was back at square one, day one, second one of losing my dad all over again, like it had never happened the first time. And in a way, like my mind just couldn't get there. My mind just, it was so impossible to me that my dad could ever have taken his life that I just sat with it for a long time, for years, probably a few years. My dad, would never have been the type, it as far as types go, that you would think would have done something like that. So just couldn't get in my brain. And my husband knew, my mom knew, and they were the only ones I talked to about it. So I would be kind of one way in my outside life, talking about, just the normal day to day, taking care of my kids and working and friends and all that. And I was a complete shell for three, no one knew. I was a complete shell for like 3 years behind closed doors. My kids didn't know. I finally told my daughters when I felt like they were old enough, because you need to know. Like, we have genetics that, we have an inherited trauma, we have inherited characteristics and behaviors that are a result of DNA. And if someday down the line, either one of my daughters developed any kind of mental illness or any challenges that way, they needed to know what was in their background. And ironically, they did. Both of my daughters have had anxiety. My older daughter had been in therapy and had it was incredibly helpful to her, saved her from just a lot of unnecessary just struggle in her life, because she learned how to cope, and she learned skills and got on medication, and it changed everything for her. So yeah, that was just kind of all the backstory. And then once I started talking about it, I just couldn't stop, because I saw the impact that it had on people. And that answers your second question, which was, well, you found out, what'd you do with it? How did you get to where you are now? Like I put content out in the world. I write books, I write columns, I write articles all over the place. I speak a lot, and I just kind of shifted gears like completely. It was like one day I was in the parenting world talking about raising kids, and the next minute I was talking about mental health and advocacy and trying to become a crisis counselor and a speaker and just share the story because it's so important. I know how important it's been for me to share my story, to hear other people's reactions to it, or to hear other people's experiences, because we learn from that. We learn from that, and we find our own voice through that. So that's what I started doing, and I found I couldn't stop. And one thing kind of led to another, to another, to another, and now I'm just fully immersed in this place of wanting to create a zero suicide world. And here I am.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and isn't it interesting how we can go through such hard things, difficult challenges, and somehow we seem to find a way to make some good out of it, to honor them, I guess, or to, express ourselves in a way that it helps to release some of that. It's amazing. And so I appreciate that you share your story. I think that it's really important for you to do that.
Well, it's just as important to me personally. It's cathartic. It's healing for me just to be able to put it out there kind of unapologetically and let people know that someone who had mental illness is not a broken person. They're a person who had mental, you would never say that about someone who had cancer, right? You'd never say that about someone, who had a heart attack. And yet we've been conditioned to believe that mental illness is a completely different kind of taboo and dirty or just unfavorable type of illness, but it's no different. It's no different.
Yeah. It's almost scary thinking about the fact that there are people walking around out there who are really in a world of hurt and aren't able to come through it and are thinking about suicide. And hopefully, now that we're talking about it more, this reaches more people. What would you say to someone, in that space?
I think the first thing I would always say is how you're feeling right now, whatever the circumstance, whether it's job related or just straight up mental health related, that they're maybe depressed, generally depressed, or having issues with a relationship or financial issues, whatever it is, it's not always going to be what it is now. You're not always going to feel the way that you feel now. And it's so hard because mental illness in particular is so conniving. Like it's its own little demon, and it has a way of manipulating us and our thoughts and our actions and our perceptions, and it makes people believe things that maybe they don't have to believe, that they're worthless, or that they'll never find a job, or that they'll never find love, or that they can't make it. And the truth of it is that, much like kind of the grieving process isn't linear, life's not linear. It's not a straight line. We're up, we're down, and that's the nature of it. And we have to be a little bit nimble, and we have to trust that there is another side to how we feel. So that's the first thing right from the jump, what I would say.
Yeah, and I can relate to that. I mean, going through the loss of my husband, there were days sometimes that, well, we took call it the dark night of the soul, where you're just in this terrible dark place where you just think that you're going to be there forever. This is it. Your life is over. This is the way it's going to be. And when you come through that a few times, then you start to realize that, and it's not, so much doing it on your own. For me, I really had to reach out and get some help. It wasn't going to I wasn't going to be able to slay that monster on my own.
Yeah. That's, you know what? It's a big, scary, ugly, overpowering monster. That's why. And you know what? We're not meant to do this stuff alone. We're not here in this world alone. And that's one of the main reasons, because we're supposed to be there together to navigate these things together, to lean on each other and lean into each other. And so, like, good for you for knowing that that's what you needed. And I am so sorry about your husband.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And you know, that was one of the things, I think, that I didn't realize that there was such a thing as a grief coach. When I found her, it was really sheer luck or divine guidance. I was going to say,
it's funny how things happen, right?
Yeah, because I was searching for the answer. Like, how can I feel better? I feel awful. How can I feel better? What can I do? Right. And so in finding her and in finding, well, energy healing, that was the other thing that really helped me through a lot of it. And then, you know, it was very similar to you. You know, I started interviewing experts in grief and finding out more about that, and doing the summits, and it just kind of took on a life of its own. And then as I go through these dark days, you know, they just happen. And I would say far and fewer between now, but still you have your moments where things are not going well. But I just know that it's going to be okay on the other side, and that I can reach out and get help, and that it's important to do that.
Yeah. That's a powerful knowing, just to have that person or those people or that community, whatever it is that you or someone else has, it's the difference between sometimes being okay and not being okay, having just that support system that you can draw on, because we all need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So how did you become a crisis counselor with this? Can you tell me more about the Trevor Project?
Yeah, of course. So the Trevor Project, so I'm here in the US, I'm here in Boston, and Trevor Project is the largest LGBTQ crisis support hotline here in the US. And we also have a branch in Mexico that's about a year and a half old, but it's here primarily in the United States. And it's a hotline that any at-risk LGBTQ youth can call. Our primary demographic is 13 years old to 24 years old, but we certainly do take calls from anyone who may call who's in crisis. We will never, ever turn anyone away who's in crisis. And for me, the Trevor Project came into my life at a very serendipitous moment. And it was just such an intersection of everything that is so important to me. I mean, they're a crisis support suicide hotline, and they're also an LGBTQ focused organization dedicated to helping LGBTQ youth. And I have a daughter who's bisexual. I'm part of the queer community. So it was like a whole intersection of the things that were most important to me. So I reached out to Trevor a couple of years ago and got involved in their training program to be a counselor. So there's a lifeline platform where you just pick up a phone and you call, like, you know, a traditional telephone number, and you get someone who's trained on the other end. And then they also have a texting platform, because a lot of people aren't comfortable talking on the phone to a live person. It's just easier to have a little bit of a buffer in between, and they prefer to text. So we have one and the other. And it really became important to me to want to have conversations with people who were struggling. And it certainly is not just relegated to people who are harming themselves or thinking of taking their lives or are at imminent risk of suicide. It's people who are dealing with everything, like coming out, dealing with homelessness, joblessness, relationship issues, you name it. Anything that is causing you emotional pain or stress, that's a reason to call a lifeline, a helpline. So we get all sorts of calls. So I trained for several months. It's a very, very involved, very well organized, asynchronous from home training. Everything is online. And I ended up on the Lifelines. It's going to be almost 2 years, which I can't even believe that it's been 2 years. So I'm on the Lifelines multiple times a week and taking calls from people who are in crisis.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a special organization doing some incredible work.
Yeah, and a lot of those people, I'm going back to grief here again, is that you can probably explain this better than I can, but I'm just thinking a lot of these things that we go through, we don't put the label of grief onto them, but a lot of what we're doing is grief. It's anytime we have to change, there's a lot of grief involved.
There is, and there isn't anybody, and I'm glad you brought this up because it's so important to say that the people we see out in the world, the people we interact with, even the people we know well, everybody in some way, shape, or form has had to deal with some kind of grief. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't refer to just a loss of life. It could be, a loss of human life. It could be a loss of an animal, which I know I've gone through, unfortunately, a couple of times in my life, and it's absolutely devastating because they're a part of your family, and that is real gut-wrenching grief. There's the loss, if you're a parent, there's the loss of, your children being young and being the mom of little kids or a parent of little kids, and all of a sudden they're off and that life has just changed. Or it's the loss of a job or a friendship or a relationship. There are just so many ways that we grieve, or like you said, loss of self. Maybe you had this intention to be something specific or do something specific and it didn't work out. And that's a loss. And we grieve those things, and those grieving patterns are all so similar. So there's an awful lot of overlap between like that sadness and depression and bargaining and all of those little attributes, they all carry over to each other. So there isn't anybody that you're going to meet anywhere in the world who hasn't had some kind of loss that they mourn.
And a person doesn't realize that we're grieving. I know when my husband was sick, he was going through chemotherapy and he just wasn't himself. And I never realized it then that I was grieving, the life that we had. I was grieving the husband that I knew. He wasn't even gone yet. And I was grieving.
That's
So,
so hard.
yeah. And I didn't realize it until much, much later that that was grief. I know people that I've worked with that have not realized that they were grieving over something that's happened in the past. They just stuffed it down and felt like they were done. Or they didn't realize that it was making that kind of an impact on their body or their emotional health. Or, yeah, it's fascinating that grief can affect us in so many ways, and yet we don't even realize that that's what it is. Yeah.
Right, because we're so used to kind of, tamping it down or compartmentalizing it, and it becomes hard to pinpoint it and really understand where it's coming from. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of unresolved trauma out there, a lot of people, and they don't even necessarily realize what it is. And then I mentioned the phrase generational trauma earlier when we were talking, and that's a real thing. I mean, it's a very real thing that can kind of transcend those generations, and in similar ways to, let's say, example that people can relate to is that if you had an alcoholic parent, well, you obviously are at significantly higher risk of having alcoholism, being an alcoholic, and or a drug user, and things like that are inherited, and we do inherit a lot of our generational grief and trauma in the same.
And that's something I had to learn too, was that we pick up on that and that we really don't recognize because it didn't directly happen to us. We don't think that it can affect us, but it absolutely does in so many ways. Yeah, getting back to the suicide, what can we do for people? Because it seems like there's another layer, a loss and then a suicide loss. just seems like it adds so much more to, or maybe it's just, you know, the guilt or the stigma that goes with that whole suicide scene. How can you help people with that part of a loss?
Well, I mean, you know, loss is loss, and any kind of loss is traumatic, and, you know, it affects us deeply and in so many similar ways and in so many different ways, depending on who we are and what's happened. But suicide is a very nuanced kind of loss for exactly the reasons that you just said. They, you know, in some cases, it can be a very, very shocking situation where you never saw any of it coming, and it's very traumatic. It depends on the circumstances, you know, what happened, how someone took their lives. As we all know, there are unfortunately so many different ways to do that, and some are far more upsetting than others. Clearly, they're all upsetting, but some are much more difficult than others to deal with. In some cases, people may know the answer. People may have written a note. People may have disclosed why they're making the decision or they made the decision. But in a lot of, just as many other cases, people don't know the full story. I don't know the full story. I mean, my father did leave a note, and it was a very, very, very short, short note. And it, you know, it was more of an, I'm sorry, and I love you, and I can't go on. But there were no details. We don't know what the catalyst was. You know, there's, look, in most cases, someone is not waking up one day arbitrarily and deciding to end their lives. It's a slow burn in a lot of ways. There are a lot of other contributing factors, could be a lifetime of mental illness or stress or whatever the case may be. So in my case, we didn't know, and it was very quick, and there were no signs. And so that's so hard, and worrying about what could I have said, what could I have done? I mean, I was 10, so there wasn't a lot I could have said or done. But I mean, you know, a spouse or a partner or a family member has guilt. I mean, there's guilt. You know, should I have seen it more clearly? Should I have been paying better attention? Should I have said something or done something or known something? And that's a hard, hard, hard position to be in. And that doesn't exist when someone dies of cancer or someone has a heart attack or someone gets, you know, killed in a car accident, or, you know, that type of loss, as tragic and awful as it is, you're not like, you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different kind of packaging to it. This is a very abstract kind of packaging around suicide loss, because you just sometimes don't know why. And sometimes you may never know why. I know I personally, I have no hesitation in saying that I struggle a lot with that. And it's, you know, it's just one of the parts and pieces that's so hard for me. But what we have to remember, and this is the one thing that I would say to anybody listening to this who's struggling with suicide loss and how to deal with it, is that the person you lost didn't leave because they wanted to leave you. They didn't leave because they wanted to end their lives and not be here anymore, and not be a husband or a wife or a father or a child. They didn't want that. They just plain and simple did not want to be in pain anymore. And that pain is what drives those decisions, those irrational decisions, to just make it stop at all costs. So there's, you know, I take a lot of solace in that. Like, I understand, I feel bad. I feel bad that my father was struggling so much and didn't really feel like, he did reach out to a therapist at the very, very, very end, but we just think it was too little too late. And, you know, combined with the fact that it was the late 70s and people just didn't talk about it. So, but I mean, there is some comfort to be taken in knowing that they were unfortunately in pain. It wasn't that they wanted to leave us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you just saying that, you know, it'll make a big difference in some people's lives just to know that, because I think we quickly think that it was something that we did or said or
didn't do.
Yeah, exactly. But Yeah, I absolutely believe that is true. The pain is and if you've been in that kind of pain and you understand, you know, how difficult it is when you have a big loss or, you know, you have a mental illness, if that pain is similar to what I experienced when I lost my husband, you can see where it can take you to a very dark place. You can go to a very dark place in a hurry.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's not to say that I was thinking about that, but there were times where I wondered why I was still here. You know, why am I still here? Because I don't like this and I don't want to live like this, you know, for the rest of my life. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I do. I really do. I think that the more people who internalize that and kind of rewire their brains around that idea that it really was just to escape whatever pain they were feeling, you know, might be a little bit of a game changer. I know that it has been for me. And when I do fall back into those, you know, those old belief systems or mindsets of, you know, just feeling so sad, I think about that.
Yeah. So is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I just think that I would suggest to everybody that you just give yourself some grace. Losing someone or being afraid that you're going to lose someone or having a mental illness yourself, navigating all that, like we need to give ourselves some grace, which we don't do enough, I don't think. So I think that ultimately ends up going a long way in just allowing ourselves to give ourselves time. We're not on anybody else's pace. We're on our pace in how you grieve and how you heal and how you navigate it all.
Yeah, beautiful. And how do people get in touch with you if they want to find out more?
Yeah, the easiest place to get in touch with me is lisasugarman.com. It's my website. It's where I have a YouTube channel and I have a weekly series called the Suicide Survivor Series. And it's very, very short, little 90-second videos. And it's all about my own experience with suicide awareness and grief and loss and navigating kind of all of those things in the real world and things that I've learned and used over the years that have kind of helped me through tough moments. And all the old columns that I've written, my new columns that I've written, any articles I've written, all my books, everything is there. You can find everything, all my socials, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all are there. And two of the most important things are actually a kind of a constant work in progress. I really wanted to create something like a mental health resources hub. You know how most mental health organizations will have a resources tab, and they may have, you know, a handful of different organizations, some of the bigger overarching organizations who provide different types of help and resources. I wanted to kind of go a step further and make it a lot more inclusive and a lot more diverse. And so I really have done a lot of work over probably about the last 9 months, really curating a huge, very, very inclusive, I guess I call it a hub. So that's what we'll call it. A hub where you can find resources for the BIPOC community, the LGBTQ community, the Latinx community, anyone in Europe, different crisis services, veterans, disabled, elderly. It kind of runs the gamut. And within those categories, those subcategories, you can find direct links, explanations, little quick one or two liners to let you know what the organization does, and then a direct link to that organization. So it takes all of the actual work away from you when you're struggling. It removes that element of who do I call? Who do I know is trustworthy? What do I really need? It just puts everything at your fingertips, and it continues to grow daily. I'm constantly adding to that list. And of course, all of those resources are just free direct resources to those organizations. And then I also have a toolkit tab that's fairly new. And I've got about, I think, a dozen or so tools that I've designed just based on my own knowledge and experience, just vocabulary to use, ways to have conversations with people if you're not sure that they're okay. What do you do when you find out the person isn't okay? What do you say? How do you say it? What words do you use? Ways to navigate things like grief attacks and loss and, you know, different types of mindfulness exercises. So though between the toolkit section and the mental health resources hub, there's an awful lot on the website. So hopefully people who are listening now can go over, take a peek, and bookmark it. Just bookmark it, share it. Everything on there is free and downloadable. And I just want people to have the resources they need.
Wow, that's amazing. I encourage people to check that out for sure. And I want to thank you again for taking the time today and sharing all of your wisdom with us. Really, really appreciate it.
Oh, that's my pleasure. I appreciate you right back for just doing what you're doing and creating this space and letting me be a part of it.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening and have a great day. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Awaken Your Soul's Journey podcast. We hope that you have found solace, understanding, and inspiration as we explored the information and wisdom that will help you move forward on your own journey. I want to express my deepest gratitude to my special guests, experts, and you, the listener. Thank you for sharing your stories and wisdom. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. The Awaken Your Soul's Journey community is here to support you. Sign up for my newsletter at www.healingenergy.world or check out the links in the description below. Until we meet again, may you find peace, healing, and transformation on your own unique path. Sending you lots of love. Bye for now.